What I did on my holidays. The choices seemed very clear to Rincewind. There was the city of Hung Hung under siege, apparently throbbing with revolution and danger, and there was everywhere else. Therefore, it was important to know where Hung Hung was so that he didn't blunder into it by accident. He paid a lot of attention to Mr. Savaloy's instructions and then rowed the other way. He could get a ship somewhere. Of course, the wizards would be surprised to see him back, but he could always say there'd been no one in. The hills gave way to scrubland, which in turn led down to an apparently endless damp plain, which contained in the misty distance a river so winding that half the time it must have been flowing backwards. The land was a checkerboard of cultivation. Rincewind liked the countryside in theory, providing it wasn't rising up to meet him and was for preference happening on the far side of a city wall. But this was hardly countryside. It was more like one big hedgeless farm. Occasional huge rocks, looking dangerously erratic, rose out of the fields. Sometimes he'd see people hard at work in the distance. As far as he could tell, their chief activity was moving mud around. Occasionally he'd see a man standing ankle-deep in a flooded field, holding a water buffalo on the end of a length of string. The buffalo grazed and occasionally moved its bowels. The man held the string. It seemed to be his entire goal and occupation in life. There were a few other people on the road. Usually they were pushing wheelbarrows loaded with water buffalo dung, or possibly mud. They didn't pay any attention to Rincewind. In fact, they made a point of not paying attention. They scurried past, staring intently at the scenes of mud dynamics or bovine bowel movement happening in the fields. Rincewind would be the first to admit that he was a slow thinker. In fact, he'd be about the 73rd to admit it. But he'd been around long enough to spot the signs. These people weren't paying him any attention because they didn't see people on horseback. They were probably descended from people who learned that if you look too hard at anyone on horseback, you receive a sharp, stinging sensation, such as might be obtained by a stick around the ear. Not looking up at people on horseback had become hereditary. People who stared at people on horseback in what was considered to be a funny way never survived long enough to breed. He decided to try an experiment. The next wheelbarrow that trundled past was carrying not mud, but people, about half a dozen of them, on seats either side of the huge central wheel. The method of propulsion was secondarily by a small sail erected to catch the wind, but primarily by that preeminent source of motive power in a peasant community, someone's great-grandfather, or at least someone who looked like someone's great-grandfather. Cohen had said, "There's men here who can push a wheelbarrow for 30 miles in a bowl of millet with a bit of scum in it. What does that tell you? It tells me someone's porking all the beef." Rincewind decided to explore the social dynamics and also try out the language. It had been years since he'd last used it, but he had to admit that Rid Cully had been right. He did have a gift for languages. Agatean was a language of a few basic syllables. It was really all in the tone, inflection, and context. Otherwise, the word for military leader was also the word for long-tailed marmot, male sexual organ, and ancient chicken coop. "Hey there, you," he shouted. To bend bamboo? An expression of disapproval? Stop? The barrow slewed to a halt. No one looked at him. They looked past him, or around him, or towards his feet. Eventually, the wheelbarrow pusher, in the manner of a man who knows he's in for it no matter what he does, mumbled,
"Your honour commands?"
Rincewind felt very sorry later for what he said next. He said, "Just give me all your food. And unwilling dogs, will you?" They watched him impassively. "Arranged beetles? Variety of waterfall? Money." There was a general fumbling and shifting among the passengers. Then the wheelbarrow pusher sidled towards Rincewind, head down, and held up his hat. It contained some rice, some dried fish, a highly dangerous-looking egg, and about a pound of gold in big round coins. Rincewind stared at the gold. Gold was as common as copper on the counterweight continent. That was one of the few things everyone knew about the place. There was no point in Cohen trying any kind of big robbery. There was a limit to what anyone could carry. He might as well rob one peasant village and live like a king for the rest of his life. It wouldn't be as if he'd need that much. The later suddenly caught up with him, and he did indeed feel quite ashamed. These people had hardly anything, apart from loads of gold.